That's how long have you lived here?
Since 93.
All right, we are live.
Oh, looks like we went live. Mr. Impatient Button Pusher over there.
Yeah, no, I got to share it. So take over for a minute so I can share this.
Take over? Oh, whatever. So, well, we don't want to get going too much because I don't want to get a lot of information out of him in this short period of time while you're trying to get just it all shared.
I'll come up to that.
Oh, good grief. So this website that you put together, mm-hmm. I did say your name right, correct? Tobias?
Tobias, yep.
Okay. So this website you put together is singular for, let's see if I could say it, Fortean?
Yes, that's uh-huh. it. You're one of the few people who are not familiar with the word who get it right on the first try. I didn't even want to try.
But I did look it up because I wanted to kind of get an idea of how to pronounce it.
Oh, okay.
And it did give me a pronunciation and said it was from a word that was derived from a paranormal investigator's last name. Of Fort, Charles.
Yeah,
Fort.
Charles Fort. Actually, he was a collector.
1920s.
Yeah. Well, really, what he did was he would collect weird news stories from all over the world, and then he would put them together in these collections and write books about them. Frankly, and get a lot of interesting, often tongue-in-cheek observations about these weird stories. And you know, honestly. It's unfortunate that more people don't know his name because he really is the father of paranormal investigation as we know it, especially today, you know?
So he was one of them that was actually pushing towards making it more of a, let's see if I can think of the proper terms. Now I'm going to be lost. I do this every now and then. I'll think of something I want to say, and then I'll just kind of track off. It's his fault, by the way.
Not my fault.
It's your fault.
Oh, sure. Well, he had a very...
It's going to drive me nuts. Keep going.
You know,
Tobias, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. I was just going to say, you know, he had a very... holistic view, or that is to say, like he took a very holistic view of paranormal phenomena. So, you know, he would look at everything from, you know, strange rains of like rocks and frogs to lights in the sky to everything, you know? So you see people these days, or really in the modern day, you know, as far back as John Keel and like Jacques Vallée and a lot of those guys. And Lauren Coleman is another one. And really, they all follow in the tradition of Charles Fort. You know, like they cover all of these different weird phenomena. They make connections between them. And every one of them, you know, really, honestly, if you familiarize yourself with their work, every single one of them really pays homage to Charles Fort in one way or another. It's not unusual to hear his name come up, you know, quite a bit.
So he was kind of, basically you're saying he's kind of the pioneer of trying to make the paranormal investigations more of a normality.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a pretty good way to put it, honestly. You know, Fort had this idea about what he liked to call damned data. And the reason he referred to it as such was because he was... really equally disgusted with both how the scientific and religious institutions of his day regarded any bit of information that was inconvenient to their paradigm. So, you know, he would see, well, scientists as well as religious leaders ignoring this weird stuff that would happen, you know,
right.
From ghosts to UFOs to just all kinds of like anomalous phenomena. And he took a strong stance against it, frankly, and he wrote pretty prolifically about how, you know, sort of fed up he was by you know, the supposed thinkers of that time just sort of willfully ignoring all of this stuff.
Basically, being a little deterred towards the closed-minded people that didn't want to take and actually look at the evidence that was there in front of them and try to analyze it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I can kind of understand that because there's a lot of stuff out there, a lot of evidence that people have caught. Some of it can be debunked, and some of it you're looking at it going, I don't know how that happens. I mean, we've got a few of them too, so. Nice. So about what age and what really got you into this?
Well, you know, at a very young age, you know, I had a series, really ongoing series. Like, I still experience weird stuff. But when I was a little kid, you know, I had some, for lack of a better word, paranormal experiences. And, you know, at the time, they were pretty isolating, you know, because I would tell my parents about it, but they didn't believe me. They actually do now. They're wonderful parents. I don't want anybody to think that they're not. It's just at the time, you know, I think they thought it was a child's imagination, but they never went away, and I have continued to experience weird things. So when I was a kid, at that age where, you know, I really wasn't being believed, and again, that was pretty normal at that time in the 80s, you know, I didn't really have a lot of places I could turn. So, like, I think probably a lot of kids my age at that time, I went to the library. You know, we didn't have the internet or anything, so the library was really your only recourse for learning about anything.
Yep.
And you know, so I'd go to the library, and I found a bunch of books by, you know, guys like John Keel and Brad Steiger, you know, Lauren Coleman. And they were writing often about the kind of stuff that I was experiencing. And so I found these books, and I was able to read about people who were experiencing things similar to me. And it really helped, frankly. Like, it helped a lot with the sort of, like, isolation I felt. And so as the years went on, and, you know, I got into my late 20s, and I decided, I mean, that's really what I wanted to do. You know, up until then, I had kind of been searching, you know, trying to find my path, as it were. And, you know, I finally figured it out. You know, I wanted to be able to help people in the way that those investigators and researchers and authors helped me, you know, by talking to people, helping them understand their experiences as best I can, and sharing those experiences with other people who might feel isolated, you know, who might otherwise not think that, or think that nobody else is experiencing what they're going through.
Right. And around the time that I was a child, and then around the time that you were young too, we would always run across the hard-headed and closed-minded people that just didn't want to listen
There's
to what
quite
we had
a few
to
of
say.
Those.
And there are a lot of them out there. Yeah. I mean, you can right now, there are people you can walk up to that with full evidence, full, complete, total evidence that cannot be debunked, and they'll still look at it and say, nope, that ain't right.
Oh, sure. I mean, look what's going on right now in the news with UFOs. I mean, UFOs recorded by, you know, our military's best fighter pilots, and people are still pretending like UFOs aren't a thing.
No.
And then I've had a friend recently.
Well, he's
that
both
really
of our
didn't
friends.
Believe too much into this, any of this stuff, because, you know, when we talk, I talked about our podcast and stuff, he's wasn't never interested in it. But one day he just contacted me, and he'd been bugging me, and he got all kinds of pictures we can't explain around the Madison area.
Yep.
Of UFOs that was happening for weeks.
Interesting.
You know, and he was taking pictures, and some of them were like, he said, were like right around Lake Iganza area.
Yeah, down by Stoughton.
And then he was like over there, he was taking some, it looked like, from what used to be a shop area that was that would have been over off of Femrite Drive, you know.
Yeah, kind of in behind where the dump is there off of 12 and 18.
Mm-hmm. Yo, what did the objects look like?
Well,
I think he's got some pictures. He can bring them up and show them to you.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah, I would love to see that.
I actually have a photograph, and I believe I put it on the thing, but I have a photograph that I took myself on my Galaxy 5 that I had at the time. Hmm. I was on County T headed back to Marshall where I lived, and I left Madison and was headed out. And I only stopped to take this picture because I thought it looked really cool because it, well, he's, I don't know. It didn't take him long.
I just had a friend folder. See, that's one of his pictures that he took.
Right. And that was taken with a cell phone camera?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them.
Something has to be very bright. And now this was this at nighttime too?
Yeah, yep. This is a nighttime. See, okay. I already came up, Joe and I already talked about this. I already came up with this with the thing about planets and this and some of the stars.
I mean, most cell phone camera is not real likely to capture a star, you know what I mean? Like they're not great at capturing lights in the sky, you know? Something
that is true, I guess. But
I also believe, though, that he had it hooked up. He had it attached to a scope, a spotter scope.
Okay. Now, a cell phone camera could pick up something like a planet, like Venus. You could take a picture of. For sure.
That's what I was thinking. You know, you got Venus, you got Mars, you got Jupiter. That right now, during the time these were taken, those three planets were predominant in the skies at night.
Okay.
So that was one of my first thoughts is, Venus? Because Venus is really bright.
Yeah. We were talking about that because you looked up at, you were saying that certain planets were able to be seen during that time that pictures were taken. I mean, we got a specific timeline of the pictures that were taken, but when we went out to talk to him, he didn't show up.
Oh. Yeah, he got busy with something and didn't call us and let us know. So
that is a huge bummer.
Yeah, that was a little irritating because we were ready to interview him and everything.
I've been ghosted. It's honestly that's a big part of this is getting ghosted by witnesses. It really is. Happens to me all the time.
Do you see the picture on my green screen behind me?
Yeah,
that's the one I was talking about.
Oh, that's the one you took out in Marshall.
Yes. Now. That little light thing there, that's my night light behind the green screen. Makes it look like it's a flame going on right there.
Right.
But the weird thing is, okay, you see the white cloud here. You got this white cloud.
Sure.
And then you got that little black spot in the middle. Well, when I was getting ready to stop to take this picture, you had the white cloud, and then you had a full-length, like, black storm-looking cloud imposed over top of it, and I thought that looked so damn cool because the sun was in the west, kind of starting to set. It was around 5 in the evening, and so I was pulled over to take this picture, and then I get camera going, I get everything ready, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like just all this white with that spot in there. And the weird thing is, you know how the cameras, and this was a cell phone camera, you know how those cameras have that little red square that will try to, you know, target whatever it sees?
Right.
It kept trying to target that black spot right there.
Hmm.
And so I snapped it, didn't think anything of it, put the phone away, pulled out, drove on, went home. I was looking at it later after I got home and downloaded it on the computer so I could have it bigger. And
that's before we even started all this.
Yeah, and this was before we really started all this. I think that was back in, is that back in 2015?
Yeah, I just barely moved out here.
So So anyway, I put it up on my bigger. I have right now. I'm on a 32 inch monitor. At the time, I had a 24. So I put it back. I put it up on there, and I blew it up, and it was kind of strange. And let's see if I can get a picture for you of it.
So, have you investigated outside of Wisconsin?
Hmm. Yeah,
besides
definitely.
Michigan,
so,
I'll get to that because I know about the. I know about that book. So
right. Oh, sure. So we've investigated stuff in Illinois, but that has a lot to do with the Lake Michigan stuff. You know, we were out in Iowa. This would have been last summer, actually. We got invited out there for a little conference at the. A haunted schoolhouse out in Farrar. So it's the Farrar Haunted Schoolhouse. And that was interesting. So, you know, I was slated to speak there and I, you know, I had my presentation and everything, but then what we got to do as well was investigate overnight, you know, this reputedly haunted school.
Right.
And that was a really interesting experience. You know, I definitely, experienced some stuff there that I had a very hard time explaining afterwards. You know, there's the feeling of like being touched. You know, I swear, my wife and I both actually at the same time saw this, you know, sort of child sized, looked like a living shadow basically. And then, you know, some people had brought some things like spirit boxes, and there were some interesting responses that had come through those. And so, yeah, I mean, overall, it was a very fascinating experience, really. You know, I started investigating UFOs, and right. So ghosts were probably the thing that, you know, I knew the least about. Really, and like that I had investigated the least. It's not as though I had no interest in them. It's just not where most of my interest was. So to have that experience of being out overnight in this haunted school and doing all of that investigatory, you know, stuff was, it was great.
Yeah, I heard about that school a few times.
All right, so this is the photo.
This is that photo that I took. And this is the, you know, this is the focal center that square tried to get around. But from here to here was all black cloud when I was getting prepped to take it.
Hmm.
So it was kind of weird that it would all dissipate down. But you start moving it in, zooming it in, and that's all that's left.
Right.
And when I show this to people, I try not to put any kind of idea in their head.
Oh, sure.
I want them to look at it and tell me what they think is that they possibly see there.
Right. So, I mean, even when it was behind you, you know, it really looked like either a cylindrical object or a disc that you were looking at from the angle, you know, to have it appear mostly cylindrical. It definitely didn't look like a natural part of the cloud formation, especially looking at it, I guess, sort of holistically looking at the entire image. It doesn't make sense for that one part of the cloud to be so dark. So
yeah, it doesn't. That's kind of weird. So
right.
But well, like I said, that's one of the things I try to do as well is if I
and see, living around Madison, you know what. Flies around there a lot because, you know, I lived pretty close to the airport. He wasn't too far from the airport, you know, and we've seen all the different military flyovers. You know, you live there long enough, you see all of that stuff, you know, so you know what's what. But this was out in Marshall.
Yeah, that was shot. I shot that over a cornfield right about just before where T and TT meet.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you know that area out there.
I used to live out there. I rented a house out there with some of my buddies, my early 20s.
So you do know the area. Okay. But yeah, where the S-curve part is, where those two meet up?
Yeah.
Well, just before you get to that S-curve, I can't remember if it was T or TT. It's the one that comes into the S-curve, and then you go down a little ways and then cut back across to go to 19. Mm. But there's that cornfield that was there, and there's this little cutout just before that house on that corner, and I just kind of pulled up there, rolled the window down, had my phone up, and ready to take that picture because I, like I said, with that black cloud imposed over that white cloud and it looking like a storm cloud with the sun kind of in the back or on the west side, you know, it looked really freaking cool.
Yeah, I'm thinking
this would
be
an awesome backdrop picture, you know.
Right,
so, yeah. I go to snap it, and that's all that was left whenever I hit that, you know, hit
that's
that button.
So
and
weird.
And it was like, just trying its damnedest to lock on that position.
Right. But, I mean, where did the giant storm cloud go, I guess? Like
That's the mystery. I don't know. It was really weird because it was all gone by the time I got that up to take that picture. And that's all I got.
Very strange. Super cool picture, though, honestly.
So, besides Michigan, what other places have you investigated?
Well, you know, honestly, most of the, just to be clear, most of the, like, Lake Michigan Mothman stuff was in Illinois and Indiana. And most of our on-site stuff was either in Wisconsin or Illinois for that. And so, you know, we've done stuff out in Iowa, like I mentioned. We were up in the UP for the, oh boy, what is the name of it? Oh, why am I totally blanking on it now? There's a ghost light up in the UP. And we got to go check that out, which was pretty interesting. But other than that, I mean, really, as far as like, traveling for investigations, it's really been, you know, mostly Wisconsin and Illinois, and then, you know, sort of one-off trips, you know, into the UP and Iowa, into Minnesota.
Weekend stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
stuff you can get into the weekends.
Right.
So in our area here, since I'm in Fort, he's in Watertown, you're in Madison?
Yep.
Okay. In our area here, what areas or what places have you actually done any investigations in here?
Sure. So in, you know, in Madison specifically, you know, like we've done stuff at Sanatorium Hill.
Huh.
You probably, yeah.
That's awesome. We've been there a couple of times.
We went there a couple of times.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's cool, you know, up there.
I want to get in that basement.
Yeah. That would be something else.
I had a cousin that worked there for a while. She just retired recently. And
yeah.
She was telling me stories about they went down into the basement to smoke a cigarette or something, and they found an old wooden wheelchair, and it kind of moved. You know, and it was in one of those hallways that would have went outside to the pools, the cement pools. You know, the underground hallways, but they got filled in at the one end. But when you go down in the basement, apparently some of those hallways are still left.
Well, that I talked to a guy that was a phone service guy. I'm not going to mention the company, but he was phone service, and he did work at Sanatorium.
Okay.
And he said that all their switch boxes and everything are in that damn basement. He said when he goes, you know, he had to do this on his own by himself, nobody with him. He was telling me when you walk in and you're on that first floor or any other floor, you're fine. You know, it doesn't creep you out. You know, just normal building. He said as soon as you cross the threshold into that basement, you get this freaking eerie ass feeling, and you get, it's like the hairs on your neck stand completely straight up. And he says it feels like just death and people's eyes watching you when you're down there.
Creepy.
I want to get in that basement.
Let's go. Well, we will figure something out.
Well, he told me what I should do is see if I can get in touch with some of the maintenance people that work there and see if they'd be willing to to help us get access just to get in the basement, because I don't care about any of the other floors. I don't give a crap about them.
Well, yeah, I that's want because that basement. Some of those other floors have sensitive information. It's all state owned.
Get in there, yeah.
But yeah, that basement is what I want to see, because that basement supposedly there are still, you can still go down a few feet or so into the tunnels before the tunnels, you know, where they've either collapsed or they filled them in. Because the stories on that is that those tunnels would go out to all the way out to where the pig farm was in that woods area.
They also had pools back there.
Yeah, they had therapy pools. They had the pig farm. They had some other stuff that was back in there too.
Yeah, that hog farm, like the foundation is still there. I saw that they add, like last time we were out, I saw they added a nice little like path leading to it finally. And there's a little sign and stuff. Like you used to need basically like a machete or something to cut your way back. Because well, they never made it easy on you.
The first time we were there, it was it fall that we were there, Joe?
Yeah, it was kind of a misty, rainy fall night.
And we literally, I tracked us through the freaking woods off the trail completely.
March. You were there in March.
It was okay. It was early, or late winter, early spring at time.
Okay. Before.
But yeah, I walked us straight through the freaking woods, and just you know, with the flashlight and a little bit of instinct.
That's what you used to have to do, but now there's like a nice little trail, and it's really accessible. Yeah.
And the cool thing is, you got up until 10 o'clock to be back there horsing.
Oh yeah, you can be out there after sundown. When we went, like the most eventful time we ever had out there, I think we started just before sundown. I would have been in the spring, probably a couple years ago, and I mean, you can hang out there till well after dark. You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there's all kinds of weird feelings and eerie shadows and things to experience on that hill.
Yeah, just make sure you have a change of drawers, because Joe forgot his when that deer spiked me.
There's a lot of deer. That's a good point, though. If anybody's going to walk there, there's a ton of deer, like a ton of deer. And so
I never thought they'd be there because I knew the marsh wasn't too far away. Because I grew up in that area. Well, I grew up all over Madison, but I grew up in that area for a little while.
Shoot.
So, and I spent a lot of time up in there because there used to be a big platform on top, up a tree a ways that you could climb up to. And it was a big wooden platform that somebody put up there and built like a fort many, many years ago. But, and I never ran across the deer until that day. I almost stepped on it. It was bedded down, and I almost stepped right on it.
Yeah,
and it got up.
Oh, I got it on film, so it was funny. It was funny.
That's hilarious. I see like two or three deer every time I go. There's so many now.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous how many deer there are, and the fact that they're in town too.
Oh yeah.
I work on the east side of Madison over there off Stoughton Road.
Sure.
And and where our place is located, there's woods. There's some woods in there. We've got about 24 freaking turkeys up in those woods.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding you.
I see turkeys on like University Avenue, like no lie. Yeah, like they're
everywhere. Yeah, I seen a couple of that. That's some of my delivery areas up there at University. So yeah, I've seen them up there too.
It definitely happens. I mean, you get outside of Madison and it is like immediately like wilderness and farmland with no separation.
So out towards McFarland, you'll see coyote all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Knowing that Sanatorium Hill is probably the most notorious area in Madison, where else have you been?
Forest Hill Cemetery is probably one of our
favorite
places. Yeah.
I grew up playing Ghost in the Graveyard there.
That place is so cool. And, you know, if you know what all the effigy mounds are, and, you know, obviously, like, the Civil War burial plots are amazing.
That's where our videos
My family owned most of Speedway Road back when I was a kid.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
So I played Ghost in the Graveyard right across the street. And back then, Crest Funeral Home was known as Frouchy's.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, we've got video of Forest Hill. We've got it was a Saturday and a Sunday. Thought I caught something on film on the Saturday one, and I went back out Sunday to debunk it.
Yeah,
because that's the way I am. I caught something, I want to do everything I can to debunk it, and because I don't want, you know, I would rather be my own critique.
Oh, for sure.
Instead of letting somebody else be like, oh, you said it was this, and now here's this.
There is no shame in like figuring out what something is might appear, you know, weird at first. Like no shame at all. So yeah
I would much rather do it myself that way. So
right, absolutely. Well, if you don't mind me asking, like what was it? Like what'd you get on video?
It looked at the first part, but you got to think on the okay. I'm gonna tee it up for you a little bit because when I was recording it. He's the one that pointed me in the direction of where this was. I was fighting off mosquitoes at the time.
It was shaky as
hell. But it looked like I caught a shadow come into frame and then exit frame.
Oh, interesting.
And so we went back out the following day, and I made certain that it was that we had our spray so to keep the mosquitoes down.
Right.
But I also put the camera on a tripod and set it up at the same angle. And then Joe's wife took the other camera off to the side and got a side angle of the same area. And I went out and kind of walked around trying to figure out right about where this would be. And I determined for myself that I believe it was a play on shadows.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
That it was a play on the light, the sunlight coming down, and shadows from the limbs in the trees.
It was that path that if you're looking at the cemetery from Speedway Road, those houses that are like way in the back of the cemetery.
No, okay. It wasn't Speedway Road, Joe.
No,
Speedway.
You're looking at it from Speedway Road, like, and you go. He was.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Down by the house.
Like, if you had Speedway to your back, or
there's
actually
a tree line there.
Yeah, kind of to your back, but a little to your left. Mm-hmm. And then there was a tree line there, and it was. Yeah, I determined it myself personally that it was a play on the shadows and the leaves and all that stuff. So with
that's
when
my dad killed the car on his cousin because he was forced to take her on a date.
Wait, what?
My dad had this old 68 some Mustang, I think it was, or something, and he was forced to take his cousin Judy on a date with him. And he took the car over to the cemetery, and he was driving through, and he killed it because it had those, like, automatic choke or whatever or something.
Oh, sure.
And kill the car. So he killed the car, and then he went over to the gas station, and the gas station pretty much most of my life there was a gas station right where that Stop and Go or BP or whatever it is right there on the corner. It's like a big corner with some other shops there, but anyway,
right,
that gas station, it's all right from the golf course. Yeah, that gas station's been there for, so he was walking over there to get gas, and instead of walking over there, he kind of snuck, sat down behind one of the big mounds in the cemetery, smoked a cigarette, and then he went back up with some tree brush and scared the living hell out of her so that she went running back across Speedway Road back to my grandma's house.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Like, I don't want to go.
He was mean.
Right.
But if you look at it at night, that place can be pretty spooky when you get way back
there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And I know that there's tales of people saying that they have seen Civil War spirits walking in through the headstones back there too.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, it even has its own, and this is probably more urban legend than anything, but it even has its own like Lady in White Phantom Hitchhiker legend attached to it. So who knows?
Cell phones stop working, electronics stop working.
Yeah.
I've heard that too in there. Jogger was going through one day, and he was coming from over there by Glenway and coming out by West High School, and his cell phone just totally, the battery died.
That's always weird when that happens. We've had some weird, like, electric stuff happen with us on different investigations. Nothing in Forest Hill, but, like, different places we've had.
Now, and that was another thing I was going to ask you. What kind of equipment do you use?
Now, often, it's whatever suited to the task, honestly. A lot of the time, it'll be like a voice recorder, a notebook, and Emily's camera, frankly. You know, sometimes we might bring a spirit box. Well, we were just out in the southern unit of the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And if you're not familiar with that area, there's a friend of ours out there.
The southern unit?
Yeah. So, like, think over by,
are
like,
you down Eagle. By Dousman?
It's like Eagle.
Eagle, Dousman?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
My girlfriend's mother lives out in that area.
Oh, there you go.
Now, what would you be looking for out that way?
Well, there's a friend of ours, Jay Bachochin. He released a documentary last year, Finding Jay, and it's all about Bigfoot sightings in that area. Like,
there you go,
area.
Joe.
Yeah, in the southern unit of the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And so, you know, we got up there with him a bunch of times, experienced some very weird stuff. And it's not just Bigfoot sightings. It's like weird, anomalous balls of light and all other manner of like high strangeness. But for instance, like just by way of answering your question here, the last time we were out, you know, and this is a real thing. Actually, hold on a sec. I happen to have these by me because I'm lazy and I never unpack our like investigation. Yeah. So, oh God, this smells so bad. So we went out there, and I found a friend of mine pointed me in the right direction. See if you guys can see this. Sasquatch pheromone. I kid you not.
Wow.
Maybe caution strong odor. That is not a lie. So much right now in this sealed bottle. And so this is made by the Osmic Research Company out of Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, my goodness.
What they say they've done is combined human and ape pheromone together in what they hope to, you know, be a representation of Sasquatch pheromone. And so I bought it because, I mean, why wouldn't I? You'd have to be crazy. we bought this trail camera, and I took one of those pheromone chips, and I literally duct taped it to the back of this trail camera. We went out into the Kettle Moraine State Forest down there by Eagle and found a good spot and just set up this trail camera with this Sasquatch pheromone. That was like 2 weeks ago. So sometime in the next week or two, I'm going to go out and see what has been attracted by that pheromone chip. Like,
and
see
if you caught anything.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see.
What kind of trail camera is it?
Oh, but you know what? I have the box right here. Hold on.
Joe found himself a trail camera a couple months ago.
It wasn't like, it's not a super expensive one. I think it costs like $40 or something. It's a 845 trail camera. And I bought it specifically because I don't know a lot about trail cameras. But this brand is Ape Man.
Ape Man.
Yeah.
So how I was many like, megapixels? Six megapixel?
16.
Or 16, okay, 16 megapixels. Like that's actually good. That's actually good. That's Joe's. He got that on clearance at Dick's
Home
Sporting
Depot.
Goods.
Dick's Sporting Goods in the mall. $20.
Okay, what kind of camera does your wife have?
Oh God, I have no idea. It's she has 2 degrees. Her degrees. Yeah, she got her degree in photography from UW Green Bay and then a marketing degree from UW Madison. And so she knows a lot about photography. Like, that's what she does for a living, is like in marketing, you know, is design and photography mostly.
Right.
Because she has this really nice camera that I don't know anything about. And
Nikon, Canon.
Oh, man. I could literally
those are the two better ones. And I think Bushnell even makes them.
Okay. hey, Emily, what kind of camera do you have?
Nikon D750.
Digital?
Yes. And so
probably take upwards of 128 gig chip.
I would assume. Yeah. I mean, and she does it, you know, she uses it for everything from like shooting video to obviously stills and stuff. And it's not great for capturing things on the fly, you know, like if you see a sudden weird shadow or something. Uh-huh. But it is great for sort of capturing like the atmosphere, capturing like the aesthetic of an area. I actually got a little body camera that is much better for capturing like weird stuff. So like I'll just wear this little body camera on me, which works a lot better, you know, for like, cause you know, it sees what I see, you know, it rides like right here, you know, I put it on a backpack strap or something.
Right. Right.
And you know, it works pretty well. You know, it's something like, I don't know, 16 megapixel as far as the you know, actual clarity of it.
You know, these are here beautiful little cameras too.
I have a I use
that is a six, camera. That's a 16 megapixel one. This one,
right? Where is my cell phone? It's right here. I've got the latest Samsung Galaxy, and the camera on it is really.
So you
nice.
Got the G20.
This is well.
That's the latest one.
No,
Samsung
it's probably
G20.
The one before that. Then.
So it'd be this 10.
Yes. Yeah, I have the 10. I didn't even know there was a new one. That shows you how.
Yep, the 20. The 20 is the newest one.
Okay.
This one is my. This is my Galaxy 7S Edge. Actually, this is the one that's got the.
I remember that.
It goes all the way to the edge.
Right.
I have the Galaxy A20.
They're great phones, and you're right.
Oh, they are. They're awesome phones. They have one of the best cameras, and also the iPhones. The iPhones have a really nice camera in them.
They do, yeah. And those can be really great, you know, for a lot of the stuff that I was talking about. You know, I shoot a decent amount of video just on my cell phone. And, you know, well, because we have a Patreon, the Singular Accordion Society, so we make videos.
Patreon?
So, yeah. So, like, we make videos for our members and stuff. And, I mean, there's a lot you can do with your cell phone camera, a body camera, like a Nikon. You know, you can make a pretty rad video.
Joe, do you have your any of your equipment sitting there handy?
No.
Give me 1 second. I have to use the bathroom.
So where else have you been around Wisconsin?
You've
been to some of the same places, but we started this out as a podcast because I used to have a dog that was a purebred Siberian Husky. And he passed away on me.
Oh, man.
After I had him for 2 years.
Ugh, okay. That's the worst.
And he was a family dog, so I knew him since he was a puppy. He was 9 years old. So I was pretty upset about it because I'm disabled from leukemia. I got leukemia, and I lived at the UW-Madison Hospital for about 2.5 years. Okay, they saved my life there. So we took a 3.5-hour trip to, I can't think what it was called, Arena? I think it was Arena, somewhere. Anyway, it started with an A. We went there, and we went to this husky farm, and I ended up getting this other purebred Siberian husky. And she's almost all white. Oh. I have a lot of time on my hands, but then we started the show because he drove us up there to this place. It's 3.5-hour drive. And
I apologize for taking a quick break.
They were laughing. So right. Said we should have recorded this. So we got the idea to do podcasts. We started out pissing people off. We changed our format to the paranormal last March. And Sanatorium Hill was one of the first places we went to.
Oh, that's great. There's another place that we... you know, have been to a few times. Actually, my wife and I got married there because we ended up, you know, being friends with the owner. But the Al Ringling Mansion in Baraboo is a really cool haunted spot.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's like it was literally built by, you know, Al Ringling, like the oldest Ringling brother from the circus. And it's a weird place. Like it's one of those places that we actually had a weird electrical malfunction that we couldn't explain. So the first time Evelyn and I are ever at the Al Ringling Mansion, right? You know, we're getting taken on this private tour, which was super cool. And we are in the, I think this started in the office. So Evelyn, okay, all I see is in the corner of my eye, like the periphery of my vision is Emily's flash just going off over and over again. And I turned to her and I'm just like, can you give it a rest with that? Like, why are you even using that in here? And I see, as soon as I turn my head, she's sitting there like kind of befuddled. She has her camera in one hand and her flash with no batteries in it in the other. And the flash just keeps going off without any, like, without any batteries.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. That is freaking crazy. Cool. And you too bad you didn't have a video camera running to catch that.
Right. And, you know, so it goes off a few times by itself, and it's just like, what the hell was that, you know? But, yeah, that was one of the first things we ever did together. So I feel like if that happened today, we probably, hopefully, would have, like we've learned lessons about having backup cameras and filming
things more than one camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, we try to keep our equipment. He's got almost the same duplicate equipment that I've got.
This is our video camera.
Cool.
Okay. It's got a night vision on it. Joe and I made sure when we got our cameras that we got the exact same camera.
Oh, nice.
And then they both got attachments to extend this. There you go.
Which is an extended IR.
That's invaluable.
These are for this.
Yeah.
And then I also got a 3-pack of these, which are the batteries for the cameras.
Oh, sure.
So I'm able to have a bunch of extra batteries. And then I got this little device here, which is a temperature gauge.
Mm.
It uses it's got a laser on it too, so I can actually point the laser where I want, and it'll actually record or give me a temperature for that area.
Right. So you know what you're pointing at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we got a couple of thermal imaging cameras.
Haven't got to those yet, buddy. And that's why I was asking you if you had his stuff.
It's in the other room.
And then this one here, this is our little voice recorder. I've got this one, and Joe's got one almost identical to it. And it's a little 8 megabyte audio. So it does pretty good.
Oh yeah, I mean, anymore, like, it's crazy. A lot of this equipment, especially like voice recorders and stuff.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
the EVPs,
so much for so little.
EVPs are awesome. I mean, this thing cost me like $12.
Yeah,
and it
yeah, they're not expensive.
Yeah, it's real nice. And then now this is the funny part. I got this first. Okay. This is a thermal camera.
Okay.
It only snaps pictures. It doesn't take actual video, which, you know, I probably could have researched and got a different one that does, but it has I think it takes up to a 32 gig card.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe
and,
so.
So I got mine first. Joe goes and gets one without asking me what one I got.
Yeah, okay. So I got the wrong one.
So he wound up getting the wrong one, and it was more expensive.
Oh, wow.
So I got him to send it back and get a refund on it, and then we got the exact same one for him. And this one was cheaper than the one he got, and it's a better camera than the one he actually had gotten.
Nice. You got to do your research, you know, when it comes to buying equipment, for sure.
And then I just recently, just before you came on, I ordered through Amazon, I got a spotter scope that has night vision on it.
That's because of the UFOs, the pictures that we've gotten sent to us, and what we saw this past Saturday.
And it's got a Wi-Fi connector on it, so you can hook your cell phone up through the Wi-Fi and actually view it that way without having to look through the finder.
Yeah, I mean, that is a nice feature whenever you can do that. Like Emily has something like that for her camera where she can just control it through her phone, which is
It's super convenient. Really, I mean, think about it, man. All these devices now, they're interchangeable, interhookable because of the Wi-Fi connections and the ability to be able to just run everything off of one system.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's crazy. Like that body camera I have. I mean, obviously, like, it has IR and all that other stuff, but it's got this GPS in it where at the end of the night, I can just go and like look at a map, and it'll show me literally everywhere I went.
Wow. So yeah, it'll lay out your path for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You hook it up crazy to your computer, you can probably lay out your path.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's bananas. And the reason that I was excited to have that, like, that particular feature too, is because there have been people who have reported, like, incidents of, like, missing time out in the Kettle Moraine Forest. And so I was like, okay. Yeah, I mean, like, if I've got something that's tracing where I am at all times, right? Like, if something like that happens, I should know about it. Like, I should have some evidence through this GPS. So,
right. Oh, yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I just kind of throw it out there because, I mean, we've got some interesting equipment, and I was just kind of wondering what you had. So, so you've been
next time you guys are out doing something, I mean, assuming any of us can ever get together in person ever again, we'll see how it goes. But at some point, man, we should go on an investigation. That'd be great.
Oh, definitely, man.
Some of that equipment.
Definitely. I've got one actually in mind. We'll talk after we're done with the broadcast.
Right on.
We got some interesting footage and stuff coming up soon from Saturday. We were out at
we were out doing a Beast of Bray Road on Saturday, and we discovered that there's more than just the beast.
Well, that's the same area. That whole southern, like, southeastern Wisconsin area. A lot of reports of weird stuff come out of there. Like,
I was actually looking up some stuff on Google Maps and stuff and seeing, you know what ley lines are, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and for those that don't know, they're basically energy lines that crisscross the Earth. And I was looking to see if any of them went through some of this property that we were out at on Saturday, and I didn't see any. The closest one is actually between Fort and Madison that I seen come through the Wisconsin area.
Yeah, this took a year to set up, and we didn't have a tent.
This took a year to set up because last year was so damn
wet. We would have definitely got stuck.
Oh my God,
that was a mess.
We get a year of rain where we can't do jack crap on the weekends, and then follow that up with a year of a virus that we can't do jack crap at all.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, it's like Emily and I can go investigate stuff just the two of us because we're married, we live together. Right. As long as it's not around anybody, like, that's fine. But it's tough because, like, you know, we want to go investigate stuff with other people and, like, you know.
Well, you know,
it is.
I'm sure that we didn't do the right thing because
my wife and I took a trip on our own once, and we decided that when we took a trip, because she had a few days off, we decided to take an extra trip, and we drove all the way out to check out the Devil's Punch Bowl.
Yeah, now that's a place we're going to be headed up to soon. I want to check that out.
You know, and I was going live from my phone and having a blast, and we stopped at a couple other places that you know, we looked up because I kind of got Chad Lewis's books and stuff like this.
Oh, yeah.
So I follow those, like, you know, when I'm out and about like that, we followed those and say, oh, we're pretty close to this area. Let's go here and check this out, you know.
Right.
The UFO capital of Wisconsin was a bust.
Go figure.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know why they called that the UFO capital. I was expecting, you know, them to be selling, you know, kind of all kinds of, like, alien merchandise, UFO merchandise, right, and all
like Roswell or
like this.
Yeah, exactly, like Roswell.
Yeah, you know, but one little hardware type store, or what was it, deli type store or convenience store, and they had these two what looked like handmade type grills to look like UFO ships, and that was it. And nobody could answer any questions inside why the place was called that. I don't even remember the name of the town, but it was one of those ones that we have in Wisconsin that if you blink, you miss it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
was that the same town that holds the UFO days, like, festival or whatever?
I think so. Yeah. I don't know. The people had no idea that the town was even called that. I had that written down somewheres, but I don't have that stuff with me sitting right here.
Still.
Do you remember what town that was? Yeah, I didn't think so.
Right. I, you know, like, honestly, like, we haven't been perfect, you know, like, if we can be outside the whole time, Emily and I are relatively comfortable, you know, like, going out and stuff, because we were out 2 weeks ago with our friend, you know, Jay that I mentioned, and then our other friend, Adam, and we were outside the entire time, and we were able to stay away from each other, so we didn't make a huge deal out of it, but.
Elmwood, Wisconsin was the name of that town.
Okay.
That's just one of them.
The other two are Belleville and Dundee.
I know about Belleville.
I think Belleville's the one that holds those UFO
days. That's the UFO days.
Belleville's the one that does the parades.
Right.
It's a bigger town.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. And someone actually took an old car and turned it into a UFO-looking thing so they could drive it in the parade.
But hey, that's just fun. I would do that if I could.
Yeah, I would do it.
Why not?
I just drive around town in my UFO car. Why not?
there's a shop that's between somewhere between here and when we go in towards Madison in that area.
He's talking about Waterloo, Wisconsin, okay, right on the corner of where 89 and 19 meet. He's got three Cadillacs sitting out front. One of them's an old Hearst, and
no, it's an old station wagon ambulance.
Oh, okay.
The ambulance, and then there's
so like the Ghostbusters car, basically.
Yes, exactly.
It kind of, but it's theirs. I don't think was a Cadillac, was it?
I don't know. I just know it was like one of those old timey ambulances.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but this one's actually older than what that one was.
Oh, okay.
The one that this guy has is, I believe, an older version of
it's like a 1950s.
Even older than that, though,
it's like a 1950s something.
That's awesome.
Like a 54 or 56 or something like that.
Yeah, I see it every time I'm there. I look at it and it's like I keep thinking, God, I could get my hands on that. I'd paint it up real nice and that'd be what thing we'd take out on the road.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Why not?
Yeah,
well, awesome. I've seen a van somewhere around that's painted to look like the Mystery Machine.
Yeah. that of course that exists. Of course.
Yeah.
Why not? But yeah, I would totally buy that. I'd slap our Singular Fortean Society logo on the side of it and we would just drive it places.
He did.
Everywhere we went, every investigation.
Well, he did find it.
I kinda did something to my car.
Yeah.
I have a Dodge Dart, a 2015 Dodge Dart. Did you find the pictures, Joe? Because I know that's what you're looking for.
Just a minute. Got to find the right folder.
I don't even know if I have them on my computer.
I know. No.
He broke his phone.
I better have him
trying
here
to take a picture of it.
Shattered.
How did that happen?
Trying to get the angle and everything, and he wound up dropping his phone, and it hit the face first on the driveway, and it just shattered the screen.
Oh God, that's the worst.
Oh, I know. He comes back in, and he's like, "I broke my phone."
What do you do at that point? Can't even call for help. Your phone's broken.
I was in my driveway, thank God.
Right.
Here we go.
Oh, you found him?
Yeah.
Took you long enough. Dang. You got too much stuff on your
computer.
Got a lot
of folders. It's a big hard drive.
That's what happens when you put a 4 gig or 4 terabyte hard drive.
That's what
he did. That's cool.
I had that made and put it on my car for the back window.
Nice.
So
that looks great, man. Honestly.
Yeah, and I've been driving around all year with that on there.
Nice. Like, do people ask you about it?
I've had people ask me, yeah. And I tell them that, you know, this is our podcast and our website.
Right.
And that we do stuff on the paranormal and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah, we should totally get something like that. I mean, we have a CRV, though, so I would want
if you want to do something like that, this guy right here... Redtail wraps.
Yep.
He'll hook you up with it.
All right, I'll keep it in mind. That's gonna be a hard call in life, but I'll.
His shop's right next door to where I work. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that only cost me about $260, and that was the full print and installation. And what that is that perforated vinyl.
Okay.
And it he said it should last probably about a year and a half.
Oh wow!
Before it starts peeling, just can't really take it through a car wash. If I do go through a car wash, I gotta do a touchless one because if it you know with the stuff hits it and stuff, it'll cause it to start peeling more.
Oh,
often.
Right on.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. I get people asking me about it, and then we have our shirts that we've made, but I don't have mine on. And here we've been sitting for this entire hour talking, and you never made a mention about my shirt.
I saw it the whole time. I was like, that's a sweet Rick and Morty shirt, but it's not what I'm here to talk about, so I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
Well, I seen that on your Facebook page that you liked Rick and Morty as part of your TV shows in there. So I got to wear my
great show. Rick and Morty shirt. I love it, man. I love all kinds of sci-fi, everything. Yeah.
What I like about that show is how twisted it is.
Oh yeah, the writing is great. I mean,
how twisted you are.
Dan Harmon, right?
It's more twisted than me.
Right. But
that explains a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's Dan Harmon, right? That like he's the co-writer of that show.
He's
hilarious. I'll give him that for sure.
Well, have you ever seen the pilot episode, the one that they started it all with?
I've seen all of them, sure.
The one, well, I'm talking about the one that they was like their pitch pilot episode where
it was
messed up. You know, it's originally based on Doc and Marty from
that makes Back sense, yeah, right,
yeah, and I seen their rough draft. I guess you can't really say it's a pilot episode because it was never aired, but right. I have seen it. I found it and I've seen it, and it's bad.
Nice. I'll have to find it. It's got to be on the internet somewhere, right?
I think I found it somewhere on YouTube. I don't even know if it's still up there.
That's great.
But yeah, it was kind of nasty.
Make sure
a little
we mention
bit, but it was
this because
funny too.
This is a big thing on their site.
Oh yeah.
You want to talk about that a bit?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, our book that we have out now is The Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest. And basically what that is the chronicling of our 2.5 year journey, really ongoing at this point. Like we still get reports of weird flying humanoid sightings from around Lake Michigan. So anybody familiar with the case will know that like, the majority of the sightings at this point have been in the Chicago area, but we've got sighting reports from, you know, Wisconsin, everywhere in Illinois at this point, Indiana, even some in Michigan. And there's a lot of associated anomalous phenomena alongside these winged humanoid sightings. So, you know, think like UFOs, people who have had sightings reporting like hauntings and psychic phenomena. So it's all very reminiscent of the 66 to 67 Point Pleasant, West Virginia sightings of the famous Mothman at that time. And so that was the impetus behind, you know, my naming choice, as far as the Lake Michigan Mothman. And so, the book's out now, like you can get it through our website, singular4dn.com/books. You can find it on Amazon. If you buy it through the website, I will sign it. That may be a pro or a con, depending on who you are and how you feel about me. But it's been a hell of a ride, frankly. I did that small town monsters documentary, Terror in the Skies, and the reason they asked me on there for that was to talk about the Lake Michigan Mothman stuff. And then after I wrote the book, I was in further talks with them, and And they'd like to produce one of their On the Trail Of documentaries for the Lake Michigan Mothman. So it'll be On the Trail Of the Lake Michigan Mothman. And it'll basically show the efforts, you know, that we've put into investigating this stuff. It'll end up, you know, kind of follow us around and let people see sort of what goes into that kind of investigation. So we were supposed to film this year. Obviously, that didn't happen because, you know, this pesky global pandemic. And
nice?
Yeah, right. And so we should end up filming that next year. I mean, again, it's up in the air. You know, I've talked pretty extensively, you know, with Seth Breedlove over at Small Town Monsters. He's a fantastic guy. And, you know, we keep in touch regularly. So I'm confident, you know, we'll definitely get it done next year as soon as we can. Quick plug for Small Town Monsters. If anybody is interested in weird stuff, they make some of the best documentaries that you're ever going to find on them. Everything from the Flatwoods Monster to the Bray Road Beast to just any number of weird things that, you know, that you'd ever want to watch. I mean, some of them are available on Amazon Prime. So you can always check them out there. I mean, that's the Lake Michigan Mothman. Sorry, we were talking about other stuff so much, and it was so much fun to talk about the other
right.
stuff.
Yeah, you can carry on as long as you want, that, but
right.
I just wanted to make sure it got in there.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know, if I'm on again, we can really dive into specifically the Lake Michigan Mothman stuff if you guys ever feel like it, you know.
Well, yeah, that's fine.
No problem.
That's what we are. That's why we went to this format. I've got background in it and history in it because I used to be a practicing Wiccan, and also whenever I was a lot, you know, when I was younger living in California, I've seen some weird crap.
I believe it. Actually, I got a winged humanoid sighting, not part of the Lake Michigan Mothman stuff, but there was a guy out in California who contacted me about like a weird winged creature he had seen. Said it was like, oh boy, like where was it? Like Whittier, California, I think. And said he had come home one Halloween and he saw this 4 or 5 foot tall, you know, like humanoid bird thing like running down the street. Now, you know, of course I'm like, are you sure it wasn't somebody in a
Halloween,
costume?
Somebody in a costume? That's, right. That would have been my first
I'm positive. So
yeah,
he even drew a picture of it. I was like, okay. You know, he
honestly
gave a very detailed description.
Okay, honestly though.
Yeah.
Giving the description you're making right now with it Halloween.
Right.
Possible alcohol involved.
No, I always ask that too. I was just like, are you sure?
That
you
would sure? be that, those yeah. would be my first thoughts.
Those were my first thoughts too, you know, and I absolutely asked. And he was like, no, I was so
hey, I grew up in Cali, man. I know. You know, you guys out here think that you're a bunch of drunks. Cali. Man, I was spending weekends where I was drinking 2 and 3 cases of beer just to myself.
Wow. So, congratulations.
So, yeah, we were a bunch of drunk sons of guns out there, man. We'd throw a bunch of stuff on a big bonfire. My parents had 20 acres. We'd build this just enormous bonfire out there, and just me and about 40 different friends would all be out there on the property just drinking right. their asses off.
Yeah, no, I mean, I asked him all those questions, and I'm not going to tell anybody what he saw. You know, I don't know. I have no idea.
Right.
But I can tell you, I mean, I talked to him myself, you know, and he seemed serious. I cannot for the life of me imagine why this guy would have told me this, you know, otherwise. So who knows? It's a weird world.
It's a very weird world. I've seen, I had when I was 8 years old, we seen a UFO fly over our house. And I tell people this because my dad at the time, he's a rural carrier. Okay. Mm. You know what a rural carrier is? A mail carrier. And he serviced the entire area that we were in. He was also into, ham radios at the time, and he had this 50-foot freaking antenna on the top of the house. And this thing came over. It came in very slow. It went from the west to the east, and it went really slow, straight over the house. Never touched the antenna. Never even came close to the antenna. And my mom and I watched it come in, watched it go over the house, went to the front porch, stood on the front porch, and watched it disappear into the mountains area.
What shape was it?
It was square.
Square.
It was a freaking square ship. It had it had lights on all four corners and one big bright one in the middle.
Huh.
And most of them that you hear about, they're triangular.
Yeah, yeah. You get triangular shapes.
I actually did see a triangular one when I was working at Waste Management. One of my routes was out the other side of Lake Mills and on County G. That was one of my starting areas, and I had to be there by 5 o'clock in the morning. And during the wintertime, it, you know, it stays dark until almost 8 o'clock in the morning here. And I had made my first stop, and I was headed to my second stop. And I watched this thing come in from the west, just really, really slow. And it was a triangular shaped ship, and it was about 500-600 feet off the ground.
Wow.
The only noise you could hear, I even stopped the truck. The only noise, the only thing you could hear was the freaking truck running.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something else, you know.
That whole area is messed up.
Weird, man. Right. It's like I said, there's so much weirdness here in Wisconsin. And not just Wisconsin, this entire world.
Oh, absolutely. It's everywhere.
We are in one of the weirdest times of our lives right now.
Oh, for sure.
Now, you gonna stick around for a few minutes after our cast?
Yeah, I got a couple minutes here for sure.
Okay.
We can chat. Right,
yeah.
So, anything else for the podcast, Joe? Or are we pretty much done?
No, we gotta say goodbye. Tell people don't forget to vote for us at WisconsinPodcast.com, please.
Yes, and. Thank you very much, Tobias, for popping in and saying hi and talking with us.
Yeah, this was great.
Yeah, we're going to have you again. That was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a good time. And then don't forget to check us out, utterlyinsaneproductions.com. You'll find both the link to YouTube channel and our Facebook page there, and any news that's happening.
Mm-hmm. And Tobias, your website?
Yeah, so you can find the Singular Fortean Society at singularfortean.com.
That's right, down there at the bottom. Awesome. Been down there the whole time.
That I noticed,
just
and I really appreciate
sure.
it. Yeah, and of course, we're on all of the social media, so find us all over that as well.
A lot of information there. All right, till next time. Stay safe.
Stay healthy.